and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Oh, doesn't sound good.
My head is banging, mate. I've just come back. I made the mistake of going into Central Croydon for a little while.
You made the mistake of living there too.
And I mean, it's a cacophony of noise, but it's all preachers. I mean, if you were in the middle of Croydon today, as I was, you would assume that the apocalypse is nigh. The number of people on the streets belting out at incredibly loud volume their belief systems. But no, it's not just all kind of the singing going on. Like, a gospel choir seemed to appear from nowhere. I literally walked down one bit of the street, went into a shop, came back, and suddenly there was a massive gospel choir that weren't there 2 minutes before. It was almost like they had been beamed in by God himself.
Like a sort of flash mob gospel choir.
Yeah. And so they were singing. I mean, it wasn't unpleasant singing, but the woman screaming on the microphone about how Croydon needed Jesus, I mean, she may not be wrong.
She's not wrong.
And then literally 20 yards from her, there's another man screaming his version of religion.
Was it a conflicting view?
No, he was similar. He was of the vicar, or a pastor, I think, probably variety. But there was another man within, this is all within, if anyone knows the middle of Croydon, this is all within the area between the entrance to the Whitgift Centre and Central.
So not a very big area at all.
No, it's a tiny area.
Couldn't you
area.
Have said to, you know, man number two and three, you know, they've got it covered, you can go home, it's sorted.
Well, the third man, I couldn't quite work out, like, what religion he was peddling, but he certainly was anti the Christian thing, the Jesus preachers, because he was shouting that Jesus was a pig. And Jesus was the son of Satan. And he's really going for it. And I just think, well, why don't we have a fight? Why don't we actually, rather than just screaming at each other, why don't we just stop? Because the gospel choir can still sing while there's a fight going on. Because the louder he got, the louder the other man got. And I just thought, this is unbelievable. So I got away. I thought, I've got to get away from it. So I walked about 100 yards up the road. There's another one screaming, really? About the end coming and how Croydon needs saving. Right? And then I walk a bit further up the high street, and I don't know who these people were. Again, some religious group, but they had very natty uniforms on.
Nazi uniforms on?
No, natty.
Oh, right, okay.
I mean, they may have been close to Nazis. I don't know. I don't know what exactly they were shouting about, but at least they look smart. But I did think, do you really need a uniform to just scream in the street?
Well, no, I wouldn't have thought so. And I mean, God can hear you anywhere if you believe in him, Connie.
But it's not about God hearing you, is it? It's about getting the message out, I suppose. But my God, I mean, it was too much for me. There was one moment where I thought I was having some sort of fever dream.
Well, that's five, isn't it? Five groups of people?
Yes, yes. I mean, it was unbelievable.
And do you think, like, they were coming out to protest each other?
I don't know. I don't know. I just think they all come out sort of, I don't know whether they get a special day when preachers are allowed out on the street, or whether they're there every day. I don't know. I rarely go into the centre of town now. But I'd imagine town centres up and down the country are like this. Because I was thinking this when I was sitting there just thinking, will you just stop it. Just please. I don't need this. I mean, it's just everywhere was noise. And I don't, as you know, I'm not a fan of unnecessary noise.
Yeah.
I mean, even the guy who wasn't doing anything about religion, he was just busking. Even he annoyed me because I said, oh, God, there's just more noise.
I love that this frustration is making you cry out, oh, God. You're group number six now.
I know. I thought, oh, why is there all this noise and unnecessary? But then I was thinking, like, I was getting so riled by it. And I started to feel like I was going a bit mad. Then there was a bizarre thing where, you know, some people stand outside their shops and have a little microphone.
Yeah.
Well, there was a man standing outside his shop, and it was like one of those shops that sells, or seems to sell everything, you know, kitchenware, anything you want, it's in there, pillows, duvet covers, that sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
But he's right in the middle of all this cacophony. He's got gospel choir to his left. He's got shouty man to his right. In front of him is other shouty man. And I'm thinking he's got no hope here of selling his wares, especially when he was holding, presumably a microphone that's available in his shop, a very sparkly pink sort of karaoke microphone that he's not really speaking very loudly into. So the surreal thing of just looking across and watching a man whispering into a microphone, but a microphone that's got a hell of a lot of reverb on. So all you can hear is I can't hear what you're trying to sell. You've got to shout louder than that, and I would reduce the reverb on that mic, or don't sell it because it's clearly shit.
It sounds like a toy I used to have as a child, this sort of sparkly microphone with lots of reverb. Are you sure it was an actual working microphone?
But I don't know. He was speaking into it as if it was. I mean, it didn't seem to be plugged into anything.
Yeah, I think it was a child's toy, this.
Why is he using that? It's no good, is it?
Also, I'm not sure you're right that this is evident of every single town centre, because I live in the centre of basically the sort of religious Bermuda Triangle.
Well,
of,
you
of
do, don't you? Yes.
Weirdos. And they all keep themselves very much to themselves. No one's out shouting. I mean, the most outgoing of the bunch are the Jehovah's Witnesses, who basically just sit on a little bench outside of their church, minding their own business, handing out leaflets if you're interested. It's all very respectful and quiet over here in East Grinstead.
Well, I see, I don't mind that. Have a leaflet campaign, as long as it's quiet. I've got nothing against people believing what they want to believe, but it's just the aggressive and overbearing nature of it, I found to be so, it just drove me mad. But then I thought, isn't it weird how religious views, whatever they are, because it's not just Christian churches that do this, you get other religious groups out and about on the streets, you don't get other sort of ideas being preached about in the street very often, do you? I suppose you do like a speaker's corner in Hyde Park or whatever. But don't you?
Yeah, but that's a very specific place.
Yeah. There's no Satan worshippers out in Croydon.
No.
Sort of shouting about it. Or scientists. Like, you don't get scientists out on the street sort of shouting what they believe.
You said there's no Satan worshippers, but you did have someone saying Jesus Christ was a pig and the son of Satan. That's close.
No, but he seemed to be like, he was another version of a god. So it wasn't Satan, okay. But I don't know what it began with a Y, not Yahweh and not Yoda.
So he was still anti-Satan.
Yeah, but he was also anti-Jesus.
Right.
So he believed in a God, but not Jesus.
So he's right in the middle of that Venn diagram of...
Yes, yeah. Oh, man, honestly, I just thought it was weird. But then I thought, what could I go on the street and preach about? I thought, what am I passionate enough about? Because you've got to be passionate enough to go out on the street.
I mean, would it be too sort of counterintuitive for you to go out on the streets preaching about peace and quiet?
But I'd do it very quietly. I'd whisper.
But no one would hear you. It's useless.
What if I was to take up the mantle of the anti-car horn as a religion, as a sort of ideal that I believe so passionately about that I get a banner made and I walk up and down the high? So I could still do it just like with a sandwich board, like old school. Quieten Satan's horns.
And on the back of the sandwich board, honk if you agree.
So I thought, well, that could be something I could go, because I think we've got to stop it just being the God botherers out on the street. We've got to, because I had a big row with a God botherer on a street once.
Did you really?
Well, it turned into a long, I was with someone else and it turned into more their argument than mine in the end. But I was walking past someone in London and they were screaming and shouting and it was just, they had a microphone and I think all I said as I walked past was, oh, just shut up.
And, Christian of you.
And he screamed down his microphone at me that I was a wicked and evil man.
Right.
And I wasn't perhaps in the best frame of mind that day, and that touched a bit of a nerve, because I thought, I'm not a wicked and evil man. And just because I asked you or commented on your screaming and ranting that I would like you to shut up. That doesn't make me wicked and evil. So I went, wicked and evil? Really? Yeah, come on, let's talk about this. And I think me and my friend were there for about 3 hours with this man.
You're kidding. I think it was about three hours.
But we never saw him again.
That's 3 hours of your life you'll never get back.
Yeah, but we may have removed one from the street. I see it as like a bit of an outreach.
I mean, you could try. I mean, it probably wouldn't work as achieving what you're hoping to achieve, but you could just sort of walk past them and just sort of say, there is no God, and then just sort of be gone. Let's just dart off, and then that'll send them ballistic. But then, of course, that's probably even more noise that you don't want.
Yeah, yeah.
It'd probably be the best way to wind them up.
The thing is, they're not... I don't know if it'll wind them up, really, because... all it's doing is giving them ammunition that they need to be out there preaching more. If there are more heathens and blasphemers on the streets, then that's going to make them be even more zealous in their endeavour to convert everyone.
So what are we looking for? A way to effectively silence them?
Well, I'm just thinking, if we can't stop it, what else could we be on the streets? I'm not even saying it doesn't have to be a counter argument, because I'm not having to go at them for what they believe. Believe what you want to believe. That's fine. I just find it very odd that you have so many people who need to be out on the streets all in one go, screaming at you that, you know, you need to stop your wicked and evil ways.
You know? So what
I'm buying
passion?
Is some printer paper. I don't see that as wicked and evil.
What would be your passion then that you would go out and preach?
Well, what else could I do? I'm trying to think of things that I'm passionate about. That
detective shows? You could give out recommendations.
I could go out every day dressed as a different one, couldn't I? Go out.
You could.
Morse one day, Wexford the next. Endeavour, another. That's the younger Morse for people who want to know, which is basically the same outfit, but just in a different time period. It's just a suit. Who else could I go? Lewis. They're just all suits, aren't they? There's no point in going out.
If you went out in the street with a megaphone in a suit, people would go, it's Morse. And then someone would come along and go, correct, no, look at the suit. It's Endeavour.
It's a 1960s suit. It's Endeavour. Not 1980s.
You wouldn't stand out as a man in the high street wearing a suit. People wouldn't get that.
It's less flannel, so it's got to be the 60s Endeavour. So I could do that.
Is it only UK ones you do, or could you do Detective Sipowicz from NYPD Blue?
Well, I don't know who that is. I never watched it, but I could do.
Oh, well, he's got a short... white sleeve shirt and a long tie.
Well, I could do that. That's
bit of a tash and a bald head. But if you don't know who it is, I'm probably barking up the wrong tree.
I think I can picture him because it's quite a well-known thing, isn't it? I just never watched it, but I think I can picture him. I think I know who you're talking about.
Okay.
Columbo, obviously, I'd have to dress up as Columbo one day.
Was Ironside American or was that English?
Yeah, I don't... It was American, but I'm not sure... I should be going around in a wheelchair.
That's probably not the politically correct thing to do anymore, is it?
I think I'll steer clear of potential pitfalls of being
cancelled. So I guess you're not going as Luther then either.
I think that might be crossing a line, isn't it? I think there are certain things you can and certain things you can't do, you know?
Yeah. It's like I'm sure Idris Elba would be flattered if you was to dress up as Luther and promote his show.
Look, I can dress up as Luther in terms of his clothing, but I don't think you can go any further than that.
Probably wise.
And I don't know why you're even considering that kind of behaviour as a possibility. Who was the famous, again, one that you'd have to be very careful about? But when I was a kid, there was on telly like a famous Chinese or Japanese detective. It was all black and white. It was all very old. I can't remember what it was called now, but he was like a...
I mean, you often do this to me, and I'll find out this was discontinued in the 40s, so do I have a chance of knowing this?
Well, no, it was all from way before even I was born.
Okay, well, I've just had a quick Google. Was it called Charlie Chan?
Charlie Chan. I think it might have been Charlie Chan. Yes.
Yeah.
I think it was. When was that made? Yes, I've just seen a picture of that's him, Charlie Chan.
That's it, is it?
Yes.
Okay, I'll just have a look, see this very, you know, topical reference you've given me here of Charlie Chan. First portrayed in 1931.
There you go. Not even Chinese or Japanese, he's from Hawaii. I'm on very thin ice here, aren't I?
You are a little bit, but this used to happen, and you know, even in the old wrestling days, they would have Samoans, and they just basically have the big Samoan guy, and they'd say, "Oh, it's straight from Japan. It's Yokozuna." No, he wasn't. He was from Hawaii. He's nowhere near Japan.
I know. We see. I mean, that's the terrible thing, isn't it? And those,
yeah, it just looks foreign enough. That'll do.
I know. I mean, that was awful. I think it was similar with probably Charlie Chan.
So how would you dress up for that one, Trev?
Well, again, I'd have to be very... I think it would just have to be the suit, but I think he's so... I don't think I could go out on the streets and expect people to recognise me as Charlie Chan. So, I mean, considering it's probably not been on the telly for 40-odd years.
Oh, bless. So, yeah, I'm not sure. Other than Sherlock Holmes, I'm not really sure which detective you would get instantly recognised as.
Yeah, I mean, Sherlock Holmes, as long as you've got this deer stalk, you'd be all right, wouldn't you?
And
deer
the pipe.
Stalk with a pipe.
Yeah, otherwise you could be John McCririck.
And an opiate dependency. I'd be all right. That would differentiate between John McCririck. Mind you, I wouldn't have the sideburns. That would be the telling difference, wouldn't it?
My God, if we have any American listeners, or even any listeners who weren't born circa 1950, we haven't got a clue what any of these references are. John McCririck, how long has he been dead now?
Quite a while.
Oh, my God.
But what was on when you were a kid? Like, detective shows when you were a kid. I don't know how we got onto this. Like, I mean, Raymond Burr, who played Ironside, was, of course, famously Perry Mason.
Right.
They made those originally probably back in the 50s and 60s, but then it came back a bit, I think, in the 80s or 90s, I seem to remember that being on. But he was more a judge or solicitor, wasn't he?
I don't really remember all that well. The one, I only know Detective Sipowicz and NYPD Blue because my dad used to watch it quite a lot, and I sort of took that in via osmosis. But the one that I would say was mine was probably, and again, it's probably too old for me, really, this one. It's my mum loved this show, was Cracker with Robbie Coltrane playing Fitz.
Well, Cracker, I mean, I've just rewatched all of them over the last few months. I've been rewatching all the Crackers, and they still stand up, really.
They're brilliant. But again, it's just a bloke in a suit, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, he's just a man in a suit, smoking a lot, drinking and gambling. I mean...
Yeah, slightly dishevelled at times because of his smoking and drinking habits, but...
Yeah, but I love the shows like where there was... like, they're not police people, but they're looking into crimes. Like Miss Marple, you know, like, she's not a police officer. She's just a busybody.
She is.
I don't even know what she is, really. Murder, She Wrote. I mean, there's another one.
I was just going to ask you about that because I've never seen a single episode of it.
Yeah.
And I've never really understood the title. So I'm assuming she's an author.
She's an author. She writes crime stories.
So Murder, She Wrote.
So it's Murder, She Wrote. You see,
right,
she
so are these the stories that she's written, or is she just some author who's sticking her beak into actual live crimes?
Well, yeah, because it seems that wherever she turns up, someone gets murdered. She's never considered a suspect, which is, you know, it's one of those things, isn't it? Like, no one ever considers her a suspect, but yet everywhere she goes, somebody dies.
Hmm.
And she always solves it, because, I mean, that's what I love about those things. It's like Father Brown. I love Father Brown, right? He's a vicar who solves the crimes.
Well, there you go. There's a bit of a diversity in your outfits.
Yeah, but then I just look another preacher on the streets, just as a vicar.
We've come full circle. It's terrible.
What you realise in all of those, how incompetent the police are when it takes an author to solve the crime or a vicar to solve the crime. What was the other one? Was it Dr. Kildare?
God, you're going back a bit there. I don't even recognise that one. That's too far.
Dougie Hauser.
You're just saying words now.
Dougie Hauser, he was like a teenage... I think he was more a doctor, actually, than a police officer. I think I've got into medical dramas now.
One trope that always really annoys me about these detective shows, it doesn't happen in all of them, but when the detective who has solved, you know, we're three series in, he's solved every single crime, he comes up with a theory towards the end, and then everyone doubts him and doubts his credibility. Oh, that's an outlandish claim. What are you talking about? What sort of stupid idea is that? And at no point does he ever say, when the fuck have I ever been wrong? Don't second guess me, you bastard. I've been right every single episode.
Because he knows he's right. So why bother, you know, why bother arguing with them? Let them believe what they want to believe.
Let them doubt.
I'm going to go with my gut, You know, cause they always go out on a hunch, don't they? The good ones.
Oh, yeah.
They always have a hunch that they're going to get it. I'll tell you what, the other one I really like is Frost. David Jason, Touch
of
Frost.
I never saw it.
Oh, they're really good. Because they always have an arsehole, like, superintendent as well, don't they? That's always another trope that
I'm taking you off the case.
Yeah, yeah. You know, because they don't play by the rules. And the superintendent always likes them to play by the rules. And because they're not, we're going to take them off the case. But then they go and solve it anyway. And yet, ultimately, they seem to get away with that.
Yes, there's never a follow-up disciplinary hearing, is there?
No. The other thing I've often wondered is, like, you know, like, when they have, like... I think superhero movies are bad with this, but some cop dramas where there's been like some massive car chase or but when you look at superhero movies, when the superhero has a fight with the villain, the damage that is caused, like buildings are sort of razed to the ground because they're smashing each other into buildings, buses are being thrown about, cars are being upended, bridges collapsing. One, the collateral damage. I don't believe that there aren't innocent people being killed during these battles, but also the financial implications for any town or city when the damage has to be dealt with. And yet they're always sort of lauded at the end of it. Oh, well done. You've killed the villain. I mean, we all wanted that, but look at the damage.
I think this is what you should be preaching on the streets. You know, discussing tropes, mistakes, plot holes, and things that you love and hate about detective shows. I reckon you get quite an audience.
Well, coming to a high street near you very soon.
Now, Trevor, in the last podcast, you might remember you were talking to me about your ancestry.
Yes, and the message I'd got from someone that says I'm a long-lost cousin, although I don't believe they are.
Now, I'm aware I caused a little bit of offence during that when I referred to your surname as Common.
Well, I think we like to say it's a very popular name rather than Common.
So, after we had that conversation, the very next day, I went into work... And somebody started telling me about the mystery of Mr. Smith.
Ooh.
And I thought, oh, hang on a minute. This is the second day running. I've had two Mr. Smith mysteries.
Right.
The Smith family name is getting even more mischievous, conspiratorial. So basically, this started off because I was quite pleased that I'd solved a long-running mystery of my own. And I'd been looking for someone for a long time, and I'd finally tracked them down. I knew their name and the street, but that was all I had to go on, and I finally cracked the riddle. I should be my own detective show.
Sorry, who are you tracking down and why?
Because I had mail for this person, and I kept getting mail.
Oh, okay.
Nothing sinister, don't worry. their name and their street, and there was quite a lot of houses on there. And eventually I cracked it. And I was sort of, you know, boasting a little bit, you know, stroking my own ego. And then Someone said, oh.
I mean, this is like, is this what postmen go through? It's like, oh, I found the address. Yeah. So I'm written on the fucking letter, man.
And then someone really came along and burst my bubble. They said, oh, that's nothing. I said, what do you mean it's nothing? He said, when I first started here, we solved the mystery of Mr. Smith. I said, go on. I'm intrigued. He said, we once had a letter turn up. I thought, okay, well, it is a postal depot. So
yeah, I mean, you said it in such a sort of like suspenseful voice. And you're thinking, well, yeah, it's a sort of Royal Mail depot.
And on the envelope, it said, to Mr. Smith.
Yeah.
And then underneath it, it said, I'm sorry. I don't know his address. It's a long road. Tall trees on either side. The branches hang over the road. There's a large iron fence in front of his house with pillars on either side. And that was the address.
Wow.
And this letter caused all kinds of interest because normally if you get a letter without the full address, you just stick a label on it and hurl it and just say return to sender, incomplete address, that's the end of that. But this was like an enigma wrapped in a riddle, wrapped in a mystery. Everyone wanted to know who was Mr. Smith and where did he live. And a team of the old boys with a sort of combined experience of about 300 years, they were poring over this letter. And stone me, they actually managed to solve it.
The description of the house and the road, there probably aren't too many like that. A long road with long, tall trees either side.
Yeah, you might be right if there was only four roads in East Grinstead, but there's quite a few to be covered. But it was quite...
You live out in the country. There's a lot of trees in there.
But the amazing thing was, I thought, if you want to send a letter and you don't know, that's the way to do it. Give the posties a riddle, and their egos won't let them drop it. They will solve it if it kills them. I think it's because it goes back to the people's love of detectives. We all like to be a little detective ourselves. So rather than just chuck it in the pile with all the other incomplete addresses, which are no fun, when we give it a little challenge... Oh, everyone's a detective for the day.
But also, there must be a little bit of, as you say, pride in your work about that. You know, when you're a postie, that's a good day's work if you've delivered a letter that caused a little bit of a challenge.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, there's absolutely no chance on earth that was just posted through the letterbox. That postie would have knocked on that door and said, this one, it's a bit of a weird one, but I think I've managed to solve it for you so that they can get a real round of applause and a big pat on the back.
I keep getting a letter sent to my house from Specsavers.
Right.
It's got my address on it.
But you should give it to the postie.
But again, not my name.
Right.
So I don't open it because I think this could be personal information about someone's eyesight. So I just pop it back in the postbox with name not known at this address. But then a couple of months later, I get another one. I just think, oh, come on. What's wrong with people? You're Specsavers. Surely getting the address right would be your selling point.
I mean, you could go one step further if you were really getting cheesed off with it. I mean, what you're doing is the right thing. But if you And this is not my official advice, nor is it the official advice of Royal Mail. You could just open it up and ring them and give them an account number and just say, this person doesn't live here. Please adjust your records. Stop sending me your crap.
I could do. I mean, I did think, why don't I just open it and like start being this person?
Live a double life.
Get their prescription of lenses. Start seeing the world through their eyes. It could be an interesting experiment, couldn't it?
It could be.
Because I wonder if I was to wear their prescription, whether I would start taking on their traits.
No, you'd probably just slowly damage your eyesight.
Oh, what if this person, you know, had evil in him and those glasses started making me evil?
This is like the beginning of a really shit film.
It sounds a good idea for a film, doesn't it? That the glasses are what holds a personality. That would be, I think that's a great idea for a film. But someone gets the wrong prescription for some glasses.
So people aren't born evil, but their prescription is.
Just in the scenario for this film, I'm not saying this can be a trait throughout all humanity. I'm just saying that for an idea for a film, that maybe these glasses have been possessed, but they go to the wrong person. Right. Or maybe a spell has been put on those glasses and then they go to the wrong person.
Yeah. Why would anyone enchant the glasses specifically?
Well, you know, maybe it's someone who wants to affect the life of somebody else, make them do things. They want to make them go and kill people. Maybe it's some serial killer who doesn't want to do the killing himself, but wants to sort of get someone else to do the actions for him. Through the glasses, they control everything the person does.
I would not watch this film.
What do you mean you wouldn't watch? I think it's a terrific idea.
It sounds awful.
So the glasses change a person's character. He goes and carries out all these terrible killings, and they're brutal. It's an incredibly violent film.
So do you need to come up with some sort of working title for your film about the killer glasses?
Yeah, I don't know, a killer lens.
Yeah,
Four Eyes Says Die.
Not bad. Four Eyes Says Die. I like it.
I mean, maybe it's the person who runs the optician is the real evil person. So he could have a number. It might not just be one person. He could have a whole number of people that he gives glasses to that then makes them carry out evil deeds.
So it's the optician who is the evil sort of person casting the spells. Is that right?
Yeah, so he creates these glasses that he gives to people that then makes people carry out evil acts.
Okay.
And maybe he's not, you know, he doesn't control everything, but he knows that the glasses will make people carry out evil acts. So that's what gives him the thrill. It doesn't really matter what those acts are or who's being killed. He's not got particular targets in mind. He just gets the buzz out of watching people carry out acts of violence because of the glasses.
So maybe we could call it with or without. Like, you know how when you're trying to determine if it's clearer with the lens or without?
Yeah.
with or without. And it's to do with whether or not you've got the glasses on that you'll be the killer, or without.
Yes, yes. Because when they take the glasses off, of course, they are completely unaware of what they've just done, but they're confronted perhaps by the bloody aftermath. But they've just been in some sort of trance.
So if you managed to knock the guy's glasses off mid-crime, it'd be like waking up a sleepwalker.
Yes, yes. And they wouldn't know where they are, they wouldn't know what they're doing. That would be the way that people would have to stop them, is by getting the glasses off. But I'd imagine that the optician has created glasses that aren't very... like, they can't be knocked off easily.
But there's like a lanyard. Yeah. Some sort of head strap.
Like, maybe that's sort of what keeps them on. Like, he's got some sort of special evil lanyard.
Yeah, I'm certain. I'm definitely not watching this film. Trev, I have been playing with one of my favourite toys recently.
Have you?
Now, loyal listeners of the show might realise that we have finished our loved soap opera, Secrets and Betrayals.
Yes, it came to a crescendo last week.
And it's not the end. It might be back one day.
I think it will, however, be. I mean, there's no might about it.
However, I've not quite been able to put down the AI just yet.
Okay.
And I thought, well, what else can I do? Well, while Secrets and Betrayals is having a little hiatus.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, why don't we, for this week, become agony uncles?
Ooh.
So I thought I'd ask the AI to generate some problems in a sort of Dear Deirdre style.
Yes, yes, okay.
But not all smut and sex like you'd find in the Sun newspaper. And give us some conundrums as if it was written in by real people.
I like this. I like the sound of this because I think, you know, we'd obviously... I think we're the sort of people that... you know, anyone in trouble would turn to for advice.
So, how many of these would you like to try and do? Well, I've got six.
Oh, blimey. Well, let's see how far we get.
Okay. And if not, we can always come back to it another week.
People might actually start sending us their real problems, depending on the quality of advice we give out.
Oh, I mean, if you are listening and you would like to send us any sort of stupid conundrum, please go ahead and we'll answer it as best we can as... Uncle Trev and Uncle Ben, I guess.
Yeah, Uncle Trev and Uncle Ben. There's the... I mean, that's a new segment on the One Show.
So would you like me to go with our first one?
Go on, yeah.
Dear Uncles Trev and Ben, I have a perplexing issue with my family's pet parrot.
Ooh.
Lately, it has developed an uncanny ability to accurately predict the outcome of sporting events. While it seems like harmless fun, its accurate predictions have caught the attention of betting enthusiasts who want to exploit this talent. How can I ensure the well-being of our clever parrot and prevent it from falling into the wrong hands?
I mean, first of all, I mean, there's a lot of money to be made out of this parrot.
There is.
So I think you do have to protect it, because there will be people that want this parrot. We don't know how it's got this ability.
No, I don't think that's the problem, though. I don't want to be so smug as to shut this problem down immediately, but I'd have thought this is a fairly self-solving problem.
Kill the parrot.
No, you put a large amount of money on the parrot's next prediction, and then when you get the payout, you reinvest in parrot protection.
Parrot protection? What's parrot protection?
PPE, parrot protection equipment.
Yeah, I mean, what is parrot protection, Ben? Are we talking sort of henchmen that will surround his cage?
Like I say, then the next week you put on the larger amount of money, you win even more back. You reinforce the parrot protection equipment. And then every week, until essentially you've built like Fort Knox around this parrot.
But why... Don't tell people about the parrot's ability. I mean, you're making a roof for your own back to start with.
It's too late. It's too late. It's already caught the attention of betting enthusiasts.
But how?
That horse is bolted.
But how has it caught the attention of... Like, that must be you bragging about your parrot. Because I'd keep that... If that was me and my parrot, I'd keep that so quiet. I wouldn't let anyone know that my parrot has that ability.
The point of the agony uncle... column is not to ask for criticism, it's to ask for help.
Well, no, because I think we, you know, if you take the kind of Jeremy Kyle approach, we'll give you the advice, but there has to be some honesty about the situation you've found yourself in. And you found yourself in a situation that you must have brought some of this on yourself by bragging, going down the betting shop, going, oi, oi, look at me, boys, another winner. That's thanks to old. Do we have a name for the parrot? We don't have a name.
We don't. Polly is always the typical Polly, go-to. Right.
So don't brag about it. You should have kept it very quiet. If I had any animal that was on it. Right. You know, like at World Cups, they always bring out, like, you know, there was the octopus, wasn't there?
Yes, there was, yep.
I'd keep that very quiet. If I genuinely thought I had an animal that could predict sporting events, I'd keep it. I wouldn't be going to the press with that.
So is this our role now? You dole out the criticism and life lessons, and I actually try and answer the question and help them.
Okay, right. Well, all right. So, we've got to the point we've established what the problem is. We know you've brought a lot of this on yourself, but we all make mistakes. So how do we solve the situation?
I think I already did.
You're just going to employ people to protect the parrot. Because I'd take the parrot underground. I'd move away to a secluded place. If you've got that sort of money, if you've been able to accrue so much from your wins, you could buy an island, couldn't you, somewhere? You could disappear very easily with your parrot.
You would go to the effort of moving to an island rather than just investing a little bit of the parrot's winnings back into the looking after the parrot.
I just think if someone wants that parrot enough.
You think you'd be safe if you had a parrot which could correctly predict every sporting outcome? You think you'd be safe on an island?
I just think you'd be better off going underground. I think if you had enough money, you could disappear with your parrot.
So you're basically doing the same as me. You're saying use the parrot to earn lots of money to protect the parrot. Going a longer way around than I am.
Yeah, I think. Or you just don't use the parrot's abilities. But the fact is, people know about it. As you say, the parrot's out the bag. So you've got to act on it now. And if you need to protect the parrot and protect yourself, because people would kill you to get to the parrot.
So exactly.
You're going to have to protect yourself. And if that means moving, if that means getting away, maybe that's the thing you have to do. Because if if you're living in, I don't know, we don't know where this person is. It's an AI thing. I'm actually believing this is a. but let's say they're living in Croydon, then people are going to know where you are. It's not going to be easy to have the sort of level of security you need. So you're going
to be on the streets preaching your whereabouts.
Exactly. So. Move is my advice.
Okay, so I think have we solved this one? Have we given out our advice?
I don't think you're going to get any better advice than that.
Would you like another one?
Yeah, go on.
Dear Uncles Trev and Ben, I have a peculiar neighbour who insists on mowing their lawn at midnight, disturbing the tranquility of the entire neighbourhood. While their nocturnal gardening habits are unconventional, they are genuinely kind and helpful in other ways. How can I address the issue with my neighbour and find a compromise that allows everyone to enjoy a good night's sleep?
Kill him.
Is that your answer to everything?
I mean, look, they can be as nice as anything, but if you're mowing the lawn at night, that's ridiculous.
But it does say they're a nice person in other ways.
Yeah, okay. Well, if they're nice, you could probably have a very civil conversation with them and say, why are you mowing the lawn at night? There's no earthly reason. You can't even see what you're mowing at night unless he's illuminating the garden and there's light pollution that could be another problem. because he might be nice, but is he also crazy?
But what if this guy's passion in life is, you know, everyone's got their vices and mine is I like to mow my grass at midnight. That's just what I do.
No.
Don't take that little pleasure away from me.
That's not a vice. I think it's someone who's making that sort of noise at that time of night is covering something up.
He's
probably,
you think?
Yeah, the noise of the mower is probably covering up the screams of whoever he's butchering in his shed. Yeah, there's something not right about that. And also just get a noise abatement order from the council, but that would probably be your first step to take. But I would also report it to the police and say, I think there's something more going on with this. It's not a vice to be like, nobody says, I can't help myself, I have to mow the lawn at night. That's
but you're
weird.
you're slightly ignoring the question again, because the question isn't how can I complain, how can I stitch them up? The question is, how do I address the issue and find a compromise that allows everyone to enjoy a good night's sleep?
Right. Well, I think the compromise has to be you ask him to, if he likes to mow of an evening.
Also, who needs to mow every day?
I know. What sort of grass has he got?
AstroTurf. Offer to have AstroTurf installed for him.
But then you might be taking away his one and only pleasure.
True, I hadn't thought that.
Maybe mowing the lawn is his pleasure. But no, I think the compromise has to be, look, I think 9 o'clock is like a good cut-off point. I think noise should stop. A lot of noise should stop around 9 o'clock.
Can I just say, by the way, that this actually has a resemblance of reality to me, this problem, because I used to do a different route. And there was a guy who'd be out every single day cutting his front lawn. And you might ask, how on earth was he doing that? It must have been done after day one. What was he doing?
Yeah.
He was cutting it with a pair of scissors.
Well, that's just fucking lunacy.
I said to the guy I was with, a mate of mine, I said, what the fuck's he doing out every day with a pair of scissors, snipping away at his lawn so bloody slowly? And he said, I think he takes quite a lot of pride in his lawn, and he likes to have it look just right. And also, I think he's quite keen to stay away from his missus for as long as possible.
Well, that's possibly more to the point, isn't it? Sorry, love, I can't come in and help you cutting. She's going, why are you using scissors, you fucking moron? He's like, no, it's the best way. I've taken advice from Alan Titchmarsh. And he says using scissors is the only way.
So with our AI question, by taking away their joy of mowing their grass every night, you could be condemning them to a miserable existence with their estranged wife.
All right, well,
or husband.
All right, well, here's the answer then. Invite him round.
But that means you've then got to entertain him every single night at midnight for God knows how long.
Invite him round, right? Invite him round about 9 o'clock. Drug his tea, so he's completely sparko for the night. That's the way around it. Every night,
or he's drowsy using heavy machinery. That's a great idea.
You want to do one more of these?
Dear Uncles Trev and Ben, I recently discovered that my favourite coffee shop has started offering a unique menu item called Mysterious Brew.
Ooh.
It's a secret concoction made from unknown ingredients, claiming to unlock hidden talents and abilities. While it sounds intriguing, I'm sceptical about its claims and unsure if it's worth trying.
This is what you offer the Lawnmower Man.
It wasn't Lawnmower Man a film? How could I navigate this enigmatic coffee dilemma and decide whether to indulge in the mysterious brew or stick to my usual caffeine fix?
Well, wouldn't you... I'd risk it.
But what if it wrote off your entire day? What if you tried this mysterious brew and whilst you had a good time, it sort of... it drugs you for the entire day and it's the whole day's a write-off and you've got deadlines to hit?
Well, it depends what talent... because if it's going to uncover talents...
just because it's unlocked a hidden talent and ability doesn't mean you necessarily want it right now, because it might be a hidden talent of, I don't know, being able to fold laundry really fast. It's an ability, it's a talent, but do you want that right now?
But the thing is, I suppose it's going to unlock a talent that is latent within you, right?
It doesn't specify. It might be one you've already got, which would be a bit of a bust.
Yeah, I'd still take the risk. I'd go for it. I'd think, fuck it, what have I got to lose, you know?
I suppose that's fair enough.
Just quaff it back and see what happens.
I think that's some good advice. I think Uncle Trev and Uncle Ben have done very well.
There we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. If you want Uncle Trev and Uncle Ben to solve any problems for you, just tweet us. Send us a little, maybe a handwritten note. We all know that the postman can find us.
And that the more absurd, the better.
But we hold no medical or psychological qualifications, by the way.
But that won't stop us.
But it doesn't stop us. So do let us know. Before we go, as always, some recommendations for you. I've got another film to recommend to you. It's on Netflix. It's a film called Pixie. It's a comedy. It's about a heist that goes wrong, and the daughter of a small town gangster ends up on the run alongside a couple of slackers. It's a very funny movie. It's a couple of years old, but I've only just discovered it. Very good.
Excellent.
And the other thing I'm going to recommend, this will be for anyone like me who likes their history. There's been a very good series on BBC Two called Digging for Britain. Where Alice Roberts, who is the historian, goes around lots of archaeological digs and finds interesting things, bits of pottery, but also like more than just bits of pottery, like actual walls and bits of building. There's one I watched where the building had been, they found the potholes where musket shot had hit the brickwork, and they think it may have been possibly the first battle of the English Civil War.
Right.
So I think there's another two or three episodes. It's been on every night on BBC Two at 7 o'clock. They're all on the iPlayer, so that's more if you're into that sort of thing, which clearly you're not.
Excellent. Well, I've got one quick recommendation, which is the Adam Buxton podcast, which we have recommended before, but he's been there taking one of his long breaks in between. It's been about 5 months, but he's finally uploaded a sort of special one-off episode, and it's Tom Hanks is his guest.
Yeah, I listened to it the other day. It's very good.
Excellent. I look forward to listening to that. I'm saving it for a special occasion.
Because Tom Hanks is, like, he's such a nice man, isn't he? But there was a thing I saw that, I mean, there was only pictures. You couldn't really tell, but they, like, he might have got a bit angry on the red carpet in Cannes or something. You think Tom Hanks getting angry? That's not possible.
There's footage. I've seen footage of Tom Hanks getting angry.
Is that when he knocks his wife over?
Yeah, well they didn't knock her over completely, but they sort of almost knocked her over and he loses his shit. But I think if you're going to get cross, then that's justifiable to get cross about. So
yes,
that's fine.
Yes, but it still doesn't seem right, does it, that Tom Hanks would have the ability to be cross?
No.
To nice man. But that's well worth a listen. I did enjoy that very much. Well, there we are. That's it. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us at any time about anything. We're at Chairman Ben on Twitter, and we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.